Okay. We are at 1 Timothy chapter 5. So if you're going to go ahead and turn there.
I'm just going to have to be loud. I think our lapel microphone battery is dead and we don't have replacement. So I'm just going to be loud. All right, 1 Timothy chapter 5. The chapter, by and large, deals with how we're supposed to treat other members of the congregation, how the church is to deal with certain groups of people. And really, there's a general statement in the first two verses, and then the majority of the chapter deals with two topics. That is how we're supposed to handle widows and how we're supposed to deal with elders. And elders meaning elders in the church, not just elderly people. And we're going to focus primarily on the section that deals with widows. And if we have time, we will spend a little bit looking at the latter part of the chapter in dealing with elders. Throughout the Bible, God has paid special attention to widows. Specifically, and widows tend to get grouped with other say disadvantaged individuals, but specifically God commands that widows are not to be exploited. Go all the way back to Exodus chapter 22. We'll look at verse 22 through 24. You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way and they cry out at all to me, I will surely hear their cry and my wrath will become hot. And I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless. And this is a pretty stern warning that God issues about how the children of Israel were supposed to handle widows, that they weren't supposed to afflict them. And if you afflicted widows, well, then your wife is going to become a widow. That was sort of the message that God gives there, but you go on into Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 19. Cursed is anyone who perverts the justice due to strangers, the fatherless, and widows. Actually, here we see a group of three that we'll see over and over again in the Bible. We're not going to look at all those passages, but widows, the fatherless, and strangers. Those three groups get put together. And as it relates to widows, it's interesting. There's another command in Deuteronomy 24 that you weren't even allowed to take surety from a widow. So if a widow came and said that they were going to make a promise to you that they would do something, you know, if it was someone else, you might be able to take something from them as a guarantee that they're going to do whatever they said they were going to do or pay back whatever they said they were going to owe to you. But not the case with a widow. Deuteronomy 24:17. You shall not pervert justice due to stranger or the fatherless, nor take a widow's garment as a pledge. So you couldn't even take something from a widow as a guarantee. That's how closely attuned God was to the needs of widows, but more specifically the disadvantage that widows, particularly of this day and age, would be put under. But what do we know happens? Well, God made these commands because he knew that people would exploit widows. And we know that happened. So at the end of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 3, verse 5, it's implied that the Jewish leaders at that time had been exploiting widows. And Jesus himself, when he talked with the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23, a passage that that we studied here on Wednesday night not too long ago, do you remember one of the woes to the Pharisees? In Matthew 23:14, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses for a pretense and make long prayers, therefore you will receive greater condemnation. So, and we'll talk about the Pharisees again in a little bit, but even by the time of Jesus, Pharisees, the religious rulers and leaders of the day, they were taking advantage of widows. They were, as it says here, devouring their houses. Were they taking their homes as surety? I don't know exactly what was happening, but Jesus condemns the Pharisees and the scribes for doing this. And it's interesting that when we think about even into the time of the church, one of the very first problems that the church has to deal with is the care of widows. And in Acts chapter 6, verse 1, we're told, "Now in those days when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution." And so, even into the beginning of the church, how the church was handling widows was what became an issue. And so it's not surprising, or at least it shouldn't be surprising to us, that Paul writes to Timothy about how the church ought to handle the widows that are in the membership. So let's turn to 1 Timothy 5, and we'll read verse 3 through 16, and then we'll probably spend the majority of the time talking about these passages. Verse 3, "Honor widows who are really widows. If any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for this is good and acceptable before God. Now she who is really a widow and left alone trusts in God and continues in supplication and prayers night and day, but she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. And these things command that they may be blameless. If anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. But refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having a condemnation because they cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, I desire younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house. Give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. For some have already turned aside after Satan. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them. And do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are really widows." All right. So let's talk about a few words here, or at least one to start with. When Paul says honor widows, what exactly does he mean by the word honor? What are we supposed to understand when he says honor widows?
Well, this is talking about financial support.
Yeah. That's sort of an interesting way to use that word, right? Because without the context, we might think this means give widows respect or hold them in high regard. Because most of the time when the Bible talks about honor, that's what it means, that you're supposed to give that person respect or hold them in high regard, honor the king. Well, what's that mean? Does that mean we're supposed to financially support the king? Well, no, that's not what that passage means. It means that you're supposed to respect those people who are in authority. But when we read the context, Mike's right. The context here, honor means something else. It's very specifically about financial support. And at first glance, you think, well, that seems to be maybe a little strange. I mean, the passage supports it, right? In when we get to this, verse 17, it says, talking about elders, "Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor." Well, what double honor? And then notice what it says there. "For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out grain." We'll talk about that verse in a minute. But when we look at the context, both of the widows and of elders, the idea here is financial support. And this is not a common way that honor is used in the Bible, but it's not the only place in the 1 Timothy chapter 5. We also see Jesus use honor in the terms of financial support in Matthew chapter 15. So if somebody wants to turn to Matthew 15, let's look at verses 3 through 6. Here's another situation where Jesus uses honor and equates it to financial responsibilities.
"He answered and said to them, 'Why do you also transgress the commandment of God? because of your tradition. For God commanded, saying, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death. But you say, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift to God, then he need not honor his father or mother. Thus you have made a commandment of God of no effect by your tradition.
Yeah. So when we think of the Ten Commandments, we think of honor your father and mother. I mean, we oftentimes think of, okay, we've got to respect your parents, right? But it's more than that, isn't it? And Jesus makes it clear here that the Pharisees, had broken the commandment of God by this tradition that said, well, all of my money's going to go to the temple, and so I don't have any money to take care of you. And Jesus says, when you do that, you're not honoring your parents. You have a financial responsibility to take care of your parents when they're older, and when you don't, you're not honoring them. And so this is an interesting situation, right? Because the honor given to widows, right, the responsibility to care for them financially is both the responsibility of the church, which we see here, but it's also a responsibility of individual members. Remember that James, when he writes and talks about pure and undefiled religion, what are the two examples that he gives?
Widows and orphans.
That's right. He says, but what does he say about widows and orphans? Visit them, which is another interesting word there. It doesn't mean that go and check on them. The word here implies to care for and look after. And so you're not going to get out of having to take care of widows, right? The church is responsible to take care of widows, and you as an individual are also responsible to look after widows. So there's two different groups of widows here in 1 Timothy chapter 5 that are talked about. And what are they? How does Paul describe them?
Real and moochers?
Well, okay.
Younger and older.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I think you both have one right answer. It's real widows, or really widows, and younger widows. And I don't know that you're inherently wrong, Mike, in saying older widows. But there is an older widow that isn't really a widow, as Paul describes here. So it's really widows and younger widows. So let's first start talking about those who are really widows. Paul lists several qualifications or restrictions for the care of those who he describes as really widows, and that helps us understand what he means by really widows. So let's take a few minutes and talk about what those are and why that's either a qualification or a restriction. So what's the first qualification that we see there?
If they have children or grandchildren that can take care of them, then it's their responsibility.
Yeah, okay, all right. So I said qualification, but it's a restriction, right? Okay. So if you're a widow and you have children or grandchildren, and presumably living children or grandchildren, and why might I say they need to be living children or grandchildren?
Because they may have left them financially, life insurance or... that probably wasn't the thing then, but they could have been left in the state or left financially able to take care of themselves.
Okay.
Well, they could have had children and they passed away.
Yeah.
Like miscarriage or infant loss.
Yeah. So look at verse 5. Verse 5 further clarifies it for us, right? It says there is left alone. Okay, so that's the implication of left alone. So James, the reason this matters is because why? Yeah, if you got children, it's the obligation of the children to take care of their mother, or grandchildren to take care of their grandmother. There is an expectation here. And remember what Jesus says to the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 15. We just talked about it, that the Pharisees weren't taking care of their parents, and they were breaking the law, right? And so... Paul really focuses in on this more than any of the other restrictions or qualifications. And it makes me wonder if this was a problem, not just for the Pharisees, but for some in the first century church. Dwayne?
That means that she can't be divorced.
Yeah, okay.
So she wouldn't be a widow indeed if she's divorced, or whether she's a brother's widow.
Yeah, all right, so that's a good idea. Yeah, a good point. Yeah, we are talking about someone here whose husband has passed. And there are going to be women in the church who are left alone, right, that either never married or are separated or divorced from their husband. Yeah, so this is, but that's not the group that's being discussed here. We will talk a little bit about single women in a little bit, but well, you're right. Yeah, we're talking about women whose husbands have passed away. And Paul mentions this idea of care for these women a couple of different times. So in verse 16, I mean, he ends the discussion by saying, if a believing man or woman has widows. So it's a funny way to say that, but if a son or a daughter in the church has a mother whose husband has died, then let them relieve them, meaning you're responsible for them, and don't let the church be burdened with them. And why is that? Because there's probably other women in the church who are really widows, who have no one to care for them.
Hey, Ben?
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll touch on this later, but I think one of the implications we need to think through today is the cultural difference that we have in maybe two ways. One is, back then, a lot of people lived with multiple generations of family, and it was visible and apparent whenever that family wasn't taken care of. Today, we live in situations where a mother may live five states away, and does that distance relieve somebody from their responsibility to take care of them? No, it doesn't. And then the second is, we have a system, a governmental system of caring for our elderly and widows. Should that take the place of our responsibilities? And the answer is no, it shouldn't. Just because, you know, a widow may have a nominal amount of Social Security or other things like that, or they live in a nursing home, doesn't mean that it's somebody else's responsibility.
Yeah, excellent point here. And really, we are talking about, I mean, it seems to be focused on the church taking care of them financially, but yeah, there's a broader topic there. You know, it really is. If there's a widow in the church who has no one, the church not only can help them financially, but can support them because they're part of the family too, right?
Well, the rules of Christianity apply to all people all the time. Paul, it's understood, you know, that widows should be treated as part of the church if they are part of the church. This is just dealing with the financial aspect. Paul's saying, of course you need to treat them as members of the church. This is just above that, more above that.
Yep. All right, verse 8. This is a verse that we know well. If you don't provide for your own house, you're worse than an unbeliever. That's one other comment that Paul makes about this. All right, so that's the first restriction. So then the next thing we notice is in verse 5, trusts in God and continues in prayer and supplication. So why is this a qualification for taking care of widows in the church?
Well, to me, it's a lot like when they talk about the young people, when they don't have the responsibility of going to work and taking care of a family, then they should be about the Lord's work. And the same thing is true here. If there's no family for them to have to take care of or a household that they have to manage, then they could be about the Lord's work. They could be praying and doing what things to further the kingdom.
Yeah. So we're going to see two different groups of these qualifications, and this is the first one. And this is about spiritual things. Like trust in the Lord, supplications, prayers. These are well, at least in contrast to the others, these are spiritual things. If we look a little bit later, we're going to notice some physical qualifications, and that has to do with being well reported of good works. So here are some physical things that they've done. So we kind of got both ends of the spectrum covered here. That this, they are devoted spiritually, devoted to spiritual matters. They have a grounded faith. When I think about this, I think about a particular woman in the Bible, and that's Anna. Because the same thing is said of Anna. Luke chapter 22, 36 through 38. Now there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel, of the tribe of Asher. She was of great age and lived with her husband 7 years after her virginity.
And this woman was a widow of about 84 years and did not depart from the temple, but served God with fasting and prayers day, night and day. And coming in that instant, she gave thanks to the Lord and spoke of him to all those who looked for the redemption in Jerusalem. So here's this woman. It said that she was a widow. And I think she's 84 years old. And I think that she had been married for 7 years. That's how I interpret that. But you can have a different opinion of it. The point here is that she's a widow. She's an older widow. And she is serving in the temple. And it's interesting that the Jews had obligations to tithe, and that tithe was used to support the Levites. Well, she's of the tribe of Asher. I think that's important for us to know that she's in the temple serving, and she's not a Levite. And she had no obligation to be there, but she chose to be there. And I think the temple is supporting her, but I don't know that. The temple certainly didn't have an obligation to, because it was that was for the Levites. Okay. Let's get to Dwayne.
It's good to know what 84 is. It's great.
Oh, okay.
It's a great age.
It's a great age. All right. Well, I hope to see it someday. All right. So let's talk about age. So in verse 9, we have an age qualification. And I'm curious as to why a person who is a really, really a widow has to be older than 60. It's a very specific age. What thoughts do we have on this?
Well, my thought is, at least in that time, and pretty much now too, you know, Paul's talking about women that, from the financial standpoint, they don't have a way of making it in the world anymore. They're too old to get a job, as we might say now. There's women that are 60 now. They're not too old. But generally, they are, and certainly then. I would think that they were. And he puts all these other restrictions on there, too, that they, or qualifications that they have to meet. They're not 40, they're not 30, and they're not going to get married again, and they're not going to be able to support themselves again. And it's very apparent from their age and their ability.
Okay. I wouldn't disagree with that. I thought, man, that's weird, right? Why doesn't Paul just say older widows? Why does Paul give us a very specific age? So, let's see. Is there anything like important about the age 60 in the Bible, or age 60 in the old law? And I found a couple of things. I don't know if it applies here or not. I do think that this is a case where a specific is given and is intended to be understood in some kind of general way. And that I'm not super settled on that. We have a couple of other examples of that which we'll talk about. But I think this is representative of the latter years of life. Psalm chapter 9, verse 10 talks about, in the days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80, and it goes on, right? So the idea here is that your life is, call it 80 years, and 60 is basically the back 25 part of your life. So there's the older age, right? If you break it up in quarters, 0 to 20, you're young, then you're middle-aged, then you're old, I suppose, is one way to look at it. And maybe we can look at Psalms and think it that way. There were some laws about age that differentiated 60 from others, and that is Leviticus chapter 27. I'll read those for you. It talks about redeeming yourself, I think, as if you're a slave. Leviticus 27, beginning in verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when a man consecrates a vow, certain persons to the Lord, according to your valuation, if your valuation is of a male of 20 years old up to 60, then your valuation shall be 5 shekels of silver according to the shekel of the sanctuary. If a female, then your valuation shall be 30 shekels. If it is from 5 years up to 20 years, then your valuation for a male shall be 20 shekels, and for a female 10 shekels. If it is from a month old up to 5 years, then your valuation for a male shall be 5 shekels of silver, and for your female valuation shall be 3 shekels of silver.
And if from 60 years old and above, it shall, if it is a male, then your valuation shall be 15 shekels, and for a female, 10 shekels. All right, I don't want to get into the details of this, except to say that here God makes commands and groups people into certain ages, 0 to 5, 5 to 20, 20 to 60, and 60 above. And there's different valuations for that. And the implication there is, here we're talking about a person who is old. And I think that's what's supposed to be meant here. And so, my question is, how important is this age, right? If a widow were to meet all the other requirements but be 55 years old, could the church support her? I can tell you, I'd be hard-pressed to say why we wouldn't be able to do that. I think, again, to me, this is similar to what we see in James chapter 1, verse 27, right? Where we're told, pure and undefiled religion before God the Father exists, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble. Well, is that the only thing that makes pure and undefiled religion? No, I think that's an example of what is pure and undefiled religion. So it's a specific that's supposed to help us understand the general principle. And so I think maybe that's what's happening here. Also consider that the other group, younger widows, the group that's called younger widows, what are they commanded to do?
Remarry.
Yeah, they're commanded to remarry and have children, right? So I'm sure there are people who are 55 that have children, right? I'm sure we could look in Guinness Book of World Records and find something like that. But by and large, you reach an age where that's not going to happen. So if you're a 55-year-old widow, you're not going to be able to, you might be able to remarry for sure, but are you going to be able to have children? I don't think that's the case. All right. Next up is wife of one man.
On verse 9, just
yes,
to clarify,
sure.
The term taken into the number, doesn't mean taken into the church more than it means taken into the financial number of
yes.
people that you're responsible for.
Yeah, good point there. Yeah, right, it's about taking into who the church is caring for. Yeah. All right. Wife of one man. I have another why. Why does a widow who is really a widow need to be the wife of one man?
Well, she can't have two husbands at the same time.
Okay.
Now, if one dies, then she can marry.
Sure, that's right. And I actually read some folks who... If her first husband died and she was a younger widow and she remarried, then now she can't. No. When your spouse passes away, you're no longer married to them. That's the point that Jesus makes. You're free to marry again. There's qualification on that. You're free to marry again in the Lord, which we'll talk about here. But this is a very similar requirement to that of elders, right? Remember that Paul tells Timothy. I think it's interesting. Paul tells Timothy that both widows and elders can be financially supported. That's what we see later on in chapter 5. And also tells Timothy that elders have to be the husband of one wife. And I don't know if that's coincidental or meaningful. I wonder if this is similar to the age limitation here, that this is talking about them in general, that they are not a person who treats those institutions of God with disregard. And I don't know what more to make of it than that, but it is a qualification here. And unlike the 55-year-old widow, I don't know that there's much flexibility here. If a woman has been married, divorced, and then married again and now finds herself a widow, unfortunately we're going to have to look at why that divorce happened, and that may be a reason why to not support them.
Paul told the Romans, he said, if the woman has a husband, is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives, but if he dies, she's released from the law of her husband.
Yeah. Michael?
A verse later says this widow is supposed to have a reputation for good works, which we know from earlier in this letter, is the way a woman proves that she is a godly person, right? So qualification is that she's godly. we have the same thing in the list of qualifications for elders. He's got to have a good reputation amongst people to be a God, an approvable godly person, right? But in both cases, this special quality is called out above and beyond that. Mm. I mean, if you're a godly person, you're not a sexually immoral person. But this is a prevalent sin during this time. Sexual, being sexually immoral and having more than one partner, husband, wives, is prevalent. And so Paul calls it out specifically. And especially this heinous ungodliness that's going on. Mm. You can't be a part of that.
Good point. Yeah, let's talk about the good works. Verse 10. And so, supposed to be well reported for good works. There's some specifics that are mentioned. Brought up children. I think it's interesting. By implication, children that were not her own, right? Because if she's a widow and has brought up children, and those children are still living, then, well, those children are responsible for her. I suppose this could be a woman who has brought up her own children, or her children have passed, maybe. But lodged strangers, washed feet of saints, relieved the affliction, diligently followed every good work. The implication here is that she was and is a servant of the church when there were and are physical needs. And we see a couple of examples of women who are like this in the New Testament, right? We think of Dorcas in Acts chapter 9, and then we think about Phoebe in Romans chapter 16. Now, in neither of those situations do we have any indication that they were married or single or widowed. We just don't know their status. But we do know that they were women who were servants of the church. And I think about those two women when I think about these qualifications. Okay, so why is it that a widow must have good works?
Oh, no, by our works.
Yeah, that's right. I think we can look at some other passages that talk about you reap what you sow, right? If you sow sparingly, you're going to reap sparingly. And a person who has sown good works in the church, they are worthy of reaping from that. This demonstrates her commitment to the church. And this is similar to other commands in the Bible. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 13 through 14, and so what I mean by this is she's committed to the church. She's given to the church. And so as a result, she has a right to receive from the church. And we see other examples of this. So 1 Corinthians 9, talking about priests and Levites and comparing them to evangelists. Do you not know that those who minister to the holy things eat of the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar? Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel. The implication here is that the priests and Levites ate of the offerings that were given, and evangelists, they ought to be able to live, but be paid from the donations given, the contribution given to the church. Chapter 9, 1 Timothy, I'm sorry, not chapter 9, chapter 5, verse 17 through 19, notice what it says there. Let the elders who rule well be counted of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine. We might not recognize that right away, but look at verse 18. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain, and the laborer is worthy of his wage. So here's an example where oxen who are treading grain, they should be allowed to eat the grain that they're treading. And likewise, elders who are serving over the church, if they need to be paid for it, then they are worthy of double honor. And so likewise, a widow has devoted her life to the service of the church can financially benefit from the church when she has no other means, and that's the point here. All right, Gerald.
Then I think if the world sees that widows are cared for by the church, then the natural inclination of the world is for those widows to go there to get taken care of. Mm. If I walked in and said, I want to be taken care of as an elder, never been a part of the church, I'm not going to become an elder. There is a specific list that's being talked about here, and there's requirements to be on that list. A widow can't walk in from the world and say, I'm a widow, I want to be taken care of by the church.
Yeah, excellent point.
I think there's also an inference in this passage while we're talking about widows that there's not a spiritual retirement age, that it's still expected of all individuals, whether you're a widower or not, to be producing good works in the church, even into the latter years.
Yeah. All right, we've just got a few minutes left. Let's talk about younger widows, presumably those under 60, based on verse 9. I think we talked through that. But why is the church to refuse caring for younger widows?
It says in verse 11 that they may grow wanton against Christ.
Okay, we'll talk
about what that means.
We're going to talk about that. I don't think that's inherently the reason why the church should, we'll get to it.
Because they can remarry, and if they remarry, they should have kids. If they have kids, they should be taken care of financially.
Yeah, it's verse 14. The answer to the question is in verse 14. They're commanded to remarry, right? The church isn't to take care of younger widows because they have options, right? They can and should remarry so they're to have children and manage a home. Mike, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I think the overall picture here is if they're younger, when they get over the loss of their husband, okay, they're going to pick up and they're going to take off and they're going to live their life again, okay? They're going to start over if they have to, and they're not like someone who is too old to do that.
Okay.
And it includes all those things about marrying again, having children, maybe, you know, if they're able to, maybe they're not. But they're starting their life again, and they can take care of themselves with another husband.
Okay. Verse 14 tells them that they're commanded to marry. And I find it interesting that why then does Paul condemn those widows who wish to marry in verse 11? This is a very strange thing, right? Verse 14, he says, command them to marry. But in verse 11, they're told, well, condemns those, right? Okay, well, I think the key is how we understand verse 12. So let's look at verse 12, and we got like 3 minutes to cover this, so I'm sorry about that. Having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. What is understood by the word faith there? Someone have another translation that uses a different word?
Because they have broken their first pledge.
Their pledge, yeah. This is interesting, right? This is a situation where faith might not be the best translation. Pledge might be a better translation. Vine argues that this is a pledge of fidelity rather than faith in God or Christ. And I think there's something to that. The more I looked into this, the more I think that makes the most sense and helps us understand why Paul would say one thing in one verse and something in another. It seems to me that these older women, older widows, have made a commitment to the church. And a younger widow would not be able to, or if a younger widow did make that same commitment, that same pledge, what might happen? Well, look at verse 11. They grow wanton against Christ. That is not a word that we use. I mean, we say wanton. I mean, it sort of looks like that, but that's not what this is. This is wanton. What does the word wanton mean?
I kind of took it to mean bitter or, hey, well, you know, I've made this choice and I'm going to be a little resentful because I could have had this life, but I'm kind of, you know.
Not to say that that's not right, but that's not what the word means.
Lust.
Yes. All right. So this word is very specifically about sexual desires. And to your point, Eric, yes, that I think that gets to it, right? Where here this younger widow has committed to serve the church and not remarry, and now those desires that she has start to build up in her, and now she's sort of angry.
Mentally, you're hung up on all that could have been, and you never.
Sure, did. Sure. So in that, it sort of helps me understand what's happened here. Instead of serving the church, these younger widows, they risk filling their time with other sins, thinking about what could have been, and that sort of seems to be what happens. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We talk about the duties of the unmarried. And I think this is whether we're talking about those who have never married or whether we're talking about widows. And we'll finish by looking at this. And so think about it in this context. But I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit, that it, not that I may put a leash on you, but what is proper, that you may serve the Lord without distraction. And if any man thinks he is behaving improperly towards his virgin, if she is past the flower of her youth, and thus it must be, let him do with her what he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. Nevertheless, he who stands fast in his heart, having no necessity, but has the power over his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. So then, he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. What's the point here Paul is making? If you're not married, you can commit your life to God. But if you can't stay unmarried, specifically because of sexual desires, then get married. And I think that's the point here that Paul is making about younger widows, that they may still have those desires, and so refuse them, because they're not going to be able to commit themselves to the church like they would want to. All right. Any other comments before we close? I took too much time. I'm sorry about that. All right. Let's take a short break here, and then we'll reconvene.